Hi, this is Les Paul, and you're listening to WHPC in Garden City, 9.3 on your dial.
The voice of Paso Community College, WHPC.
Hit radio here at WHPC 90.3 FM. Tom Ryan here, my lovely wife and co-host Heidi Morales Ryan here as well.
Somewhere.
Oh, good. Look at that. This is fantastic. Heidi is relegated to another room today to help me with the production duties on today's show. So if things go horribly wrong or awry, it's not my fault.
It's never your fault.
It's really not Heidi's fault either, because she's the only one who has the
patience. Because Ariel's helping me right now.
Thank God. And not only that, but I mean, at least you've got the patience to try to learn things that I should have learned years ago. Anyway, of course, Friday, we call the show How Music Changed, where we look at a specific subject, and we try to get as in-depth into that subject as we really can, or as we would care to. Stax Records has been our topic now for a while. Actually, we've done 21 one-hour shows dedicated to Stax. We are on the last legs of this series. If you divide it into thirds, this is the last third of what we're covering. And this will cover the area of, say, the summer of 1972. And that's where we're going to pick up here. This is show number 22, if you're keeping track, if you're keeping score, in our Stax series. All right, then. First track I want to play today. If you remember, in a good number of our, especially our earlier shows, Isaac Hayes and David Porter, classic songwriting team at Stax Records, wrote pretty much almost everything, if not literally, I think they did write every hit for Sam and Dave. And a ton of songs for a lot of other people on the Stax label, on the Stax roster. They stopped working together, quite frankly, when Isaac Hayes became a surprise smash superstar. And Isaac had to dedicate a lot of time to his own solo career. And David Porter, poor David Porter, ended up sort of like being like victimized by all of this. It wasn't anybody's intention to rip apart the songwriting team. Just the reality is that Isaac Hayes was now a performing star more than a songwriter. And there wasn't anything that was going to undo that from where it was. But it was in their best interest to try to see if they could retain their songwriting prowess. And Isaac decided to set aside some time to do exactly that. So they did get together to record one song to release it as a single. And basically, depending on how that song would fare, that would determine where things went. So here is the single that was recorded. It's credited to Isaac Hayes and David Porter as the recording artists. Not just the songwriters. They are the artists performing the song. And it's a song that they had actually done once before for a few other people on the Stax roster before. I think it was Johnny Taylor who might have sung this one once before. This is called Ain't That Lovin' You for More Reasons Than One.
Just one thing. To you, my love, this may be the way that it seems. But I love the way that you carry yourself. The way you wire your hair. Ain't that love?
There's been a number of versions of that track that were recorded on Stax. That was, I think, the third time that a version went down. And to my mind, it's the definitive version. It's a really great version. And of course, the idea was for that song to be a hit. I mean, the idea for any song, of course, I guess, is to be a hit. But in this specific instance, I mean, you got Isaac Hayes and David Porter reuniting. Isaac Hayes already has got a tremendous amount of name recognition. It seemed as though it was the type of thing that maybe it could have taken off. And, you know, based on, you know, on some of the fame that Isaac had already established. And I don't know if the public even recognized Isaac Hayes and David Porter as a songwriting team, but the song was great. The recording of it was great. And if it had been a hit, history could have been significantly different. But the problem is it stalled at number 37 on the R&B charts, only went as high as number 86 on the pop charts. So that track and its B-side, Baby I'ma Want You, a version of the Bread song, are the only official Isaac Hayes and David Porter duets that were ever released, despite all the songs that they've written.
I mean, it still was top 40 R&B anyway.
Yeah, it's something, but it wasn't enough for them. Like, for example, the plan was for them to make an album. If this single worked, they were going to keep working. Then they basically put out an album, and then they'd be able to generate some cash. But if the single didn't show that there was enough interest, they certainly weren't going to.
Yeah.
So the album got, you know, put to the side, and that was the end of it. That was pretty much it. So right there is pretty much where the story of Isaac Hayes and David Porter as a team ends, unfortunately. Another singer-songwriter, Little Milton, it seemed as though his story might have been ended by this point in time already. It was back in 1966 when a songwriter named Sandy Jones had given him a song called Laundromat Blues was the name of the track that Sandy Jones had written. And Little Milton had released that, and it became sort of like an identifier for him. And now the same songwriter came back to Little Milton with another song called Walking the Back Streets and Crying. Well, Little Milton tells a story here about it. The truth of the matter is, I really didn't like it the way he had written it. It was more of a down-home blues flavor thing. It was just a little too raw sounding. But we had done the complete session and we needed one more tune. I had been pushing that one aside and we got down to where we didn't have anything else left. Well, since we started working with it, Al Jackson suggested, listen, since you don't like it, I know you'll like country western. Why don't you make a waltz out of it? I don't think he was serious when he said that, but we got to playing with it and fooling around with it and I hit a groove. If you listen to it, you can kind of hear that flavor of a waltz. We just put a precise beat in it, but the waltz feel is there. And I'll be damned if it didn't get to be one of the classic tunes I've ever recorded. It's literally impossible for me to do a show without doing that song. Didn't show up on the charts, but it's the song that Little Milton feels is the song that defines his career. It's called Walking the Back Streets and Crying.
My baby told me not so very long ago. She said, I don't love you, Daddy, and you got to let me go. That was too much for me. That's why I walk the back street and cry. You know it hurt me so bad. To hear my baby say goodbye. She said, another reason had made me want to leave. You ain't got enough of nothing to keep me halfway pleased. I tell y'all, that was too much for me. That's why I walk the back street and cry. Oh, yeah. See. You know the girl, she started running. Yes, she did. After waving goodbye to me, I'm here to tell you that was too much for me. I walked the back street and cried.
Great slow blues there from Little Milton called Walking the Back Streets and Crying. You're listening to American Hit Radio, WHPC 90.3 FM. Do this every Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. We are looking at Stax Records at the moment,
for a while now.
This is show number 22, so that's at least 22 weeks. Yeah, we've been doing this for half a year. That's how time flies, almost anyway, just about.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
doesn't feel that at all.
I lost track of time.
Yeah. I feel like we've been doing this for about maybe 8 or 9 weeks. But hey, show number 22. The number speaks for, you know, there it is. Right now we're in about May of 1972. And the next artist that I want to cover is William Bell. William Bell, one of my favorite Stax artists. And he
I love him.
Yeah, so much great stuff. He goes all the way back to like 61. I think that was his first recording. That was when he put down You Don't Miss Your Water, the classic version of that song.
Fantastic.
It's awesome. And he had a lot of, you know, the hits and near hits, but he'd been on a dry spell for the past few years, not much happening. A lot of it had to do with losing Booker T. Booker T had left the label. He wanted really nothing to do with Memphis anymore. He wasn't happy with the way that things were developing at Stax. He wasn't happy with the lack of respect that he felt that the Booker T and the MGs were getting, and he was just pretty much done with it. And as a result, William Bell lost his songwriting partner, because it was basically the two of them that had written, you know, so many different hits, including like Born Under a Bad Sign for Albert King, speaking of blues.
Yeah, another fantastic song.
Right, so, you know, he has quite a track record, but, you know, so maybe that had something to do with his absence of hits. So what he decided to do here, all of a sudden, I guess social commentary was becoming popular. So he figured he'd write a song based on social commentary. And the funny thing is, to do it, he went all the way back to the beginning of his career. In 1962 is when he came up with the ideas for this song. And here's his own quote. "The idea came to me when we were riding along in our car and they had the Cuban crisis thing." That old. It goes back to 62. "It took me 10 years to finally write the song, but I was saying, God, we could be gone tomorrow. We don't know." "The night we were riding along, it was like everything that came over the radio was any minute now, the big boom."
Oh, my.
10 years later and doing my own album, doing what I really wanted to do, I said, I've got the opportunity to put forth all of the ideas that I've been accumulating in my head for years. So we dug this one up, essentially 10 years old. And finished it, and with a little bit of inspiration provided by Isaac Hayes and the success that he had had with Shaft, William Bell took some of those musical ideas and incorporated them onto his ideas from 1962, this 10-year-old idea for a song, and he came up with this called Save Us.
Crying for the
great track there by William Bell called Save Us. Although weird lyrically for the time, it does sound like, when you think about the fact that it's about the Cuban Missile Crisis, it kind of like...
It's a little out of its time.
Yeah, it takes the wind out of the sails a little bit of like, as far as social commentary goes, it's
right.
Like not exactly fresh material.
Nuclear threat has, I think, been a real threat even still to this day.
Well, of course, definitely true. I think in 72, though, most of the social commentary music was about, of course, the war in Vietnam.
Oh, yes.
Social injustice, things like that.
Kent State, yes.
Right. So in that sense, I'm sure that that's pretty much how people were hearing the song in those terms. In a sense, that's how William Bell, you know, might have been able to get away with it. But I think that the fact is it was a little bit too transparent in terms of like sticking to the original subject matter, and it didn't end up having zero chart action, none. So... That went nowhere for William Bell, although I still think it's a pretty good track, fun to listen to. Next track up is by Rufus Thomas. Now, here's a guy who's been ridiculously hot despite the odds. even after the label more or less pushed him aside, he had a comeback in 1970 that lasted for a good 2 years. He had 7 songs on the pop charts between 1970 and 1971. 7. 3 of them went top 10 R&B. Now, all 3 of those hits were dance crazes. You know, but for whatever reason, Rufus Thomas just loved to sing songs about dance crazes. And I guess I can't blame him if he ends up...
He was making up his own dance craze.
Well, yeah. Do the penguin, do the push and pull, do the funky chicken, you know.
The penguin. Reminds me of a bad joke, but anyway. But I digress.
The breakdown was another. Yeah, he had a good number of wacky ones. But in this instance... For some reason, he decides to not write about a dance craze. He writes a song that has to do with dog races. It's called 638. You know what I'm thinking about? I ain't lying.
I'm thinking I should go bet those numbers. 638 or get a lotto or something.
Well, you know what's funny? Here, you know, we're talking about the fact that it's not a dance craze, so he basically changed the
style. But he kind of mentions his old dance, right?
But he's talking about dogs.
Yeah,
he did about, before the dance craze thing, he had about 7 or 8 dog records.
That's right.
So it's sort of like going back to his dog days.
Right, exactly.
Unfortunately, it failed for him. It was actually the first in a long run of chart failures from this point forward for Rufus Thomas. What's funny is that Rufus blamed the failure on the fact that it was not a dance craze record. Figured this is losing streak was just like, there's just no more good dances out there. So he had nothing to write about.
Dang it.
Oh, my. This is an interesting story with this next group. They're called Mel and Tim. They started out as, well, they're cousins. Mel Hardin and Tim McPherson are their names. They're from Holly Springs, Mississippi. And they were songwriters and singers at a very young age. As teenagers, they worked together as gospel singers. They had a group called the Welcome Travelers. They did exactly that, too. They traveled a little bit about the country in their early teenage years, but they eventually watched how, like, the band sort of went nowhere. And they eventually decided to abandon music, and they both took jobs as bus drivers. They were working as bus drivers until they ended up getting drafted, and they ended up having to do their tours of duty in Vietnam.
Mm.
Now, they come back from Vietnam with memories of their gospel career and their background. They're saying, well, we don't want to go back to that. That didn't work out. But what about if we try some secular music, popular music,
right,
see if that could work? So they're trying to shop around some of their ideas, and one of their songs was heard by Gene Chandler, the guy who sang Duke of Earl.
Oh, yeah.
So he liked the tone. He liked their tunes. So he signed them to a songwriting deal with production. And right off the bat, one of their songs got covered, and they ended up with a big hit in 1969. They wrote the song Backfield in Motion.
Oh, wow. Fantastic song.
Yeah. So it became a big hit for Mel, you know, with Mel and Tim as the songwriters. Now, the problem is they were on this label called Bamboo, and Bamboo had an awful lot of financial trouble.
Oopsie.
And as a result, they couldn't really get any promotions for their subsequent records. So they have a hit, couldn't do anything with it. They tried to get out of the contract, but the label refused, figuring that, you know, well,
that was their only money.
Right. It's the only good thing we got. And so it ended up being a lose-lose situation. Nothing happened for 2 solid years, and it looked like it was going to be completely done and finished. When finally, after 2 years was up, a disc jockey basically took one of their tapes to Muscle Shoals, where Barry Beckett and Roger Hawkins were always shopping for new material.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to see if they could find some new people to produce. So in comes Mel and Tim with a track record behind them and some more interesting material. So they said, let's put some down. So this is a good example now of how Muscle Shoals is as much a part of Stax as anything that was coming out of Memphis,
right,
because it seems like all the best stuff was actually coming out of Muscle Shoals at
suddenly,
this time.
Suddenly, yeah.
The name of the song says it all. Here's Mel and Tim with the song called Starting All Over Again.
Western Union. Telegram for Mel Hardin. Sign here, please.
Hey, Tim. This is from Barbara.
Oh, what is she talking about, man?
She says she still loves me. She can't do without me. And she'll be here tomorrow.
What? I thought you had settled all of that, man.
Hey, man, you see, you just don't understand. I never stopped loving her. I just wasn't ready to accept the love she was willing to give. But if she still loves me, there's nothing in the world that can keep us from making it this time.
Starting all over again is gonna be rough. So rough. But we gonna make it. Starting all over as friends is gonna be tough on us, but we gotta face it. We lost what we had, that's what hurt us so bad.
Ooh, yeah.
It set us back 1,000 years,
but we gonna.
Starting all over again.
will help us make it.
Yeah.
Starting all over again is gonna be slow.
Totally love that.
Oh man, it's so meaningful, you know.
Yeah, it's like it's just it's heavy and it's beautiful, you know. And it was a hit. I don't really remember it, but it was a hit. It was number 4 on the R&B charts, which is huge. Went even number 19 on the pop charts in 1972.
Wow.
I should have remembered
that's
that.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember knowing this song. Oddly.
Yeah, I'm trying to dig it up. I mean, this is exactly when I was listening to pop radio all the time. My own, you know, American Top 40 with Casey Kasem studies and everything else. I was deep into it around this time. That's like a, I don't know, I guess the synapses that were supposed to retain that one burned out. But
oops.
But I love that track, Starting All Over Again by Mel and Tim. Next track ended up being a number 14 R&B hit for the Soul Children. A band that just deserved so much better than what they got.
It's such a terrible name, though.
It is a terrible name. I have to agree. I mean, maybe it wasn't at the time.
Maybe.
You know, you figure like you know, you think of like I don't know who did Up, Up and Away, and
yeah, it's like corny names were the order of the day.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of you know bands that would have just basically got there because it sounded contemporary at the time.
They could have been the Jive Turkeys.
It might as well be like Soul right. Children Jive. Yeah, there you
yeah.
go. Exactly. Well, this is I believe one of their better recordings and one of their bigger hits too. It's called Don't Take My Kindness for Weakness.
Sweet.
Soul Children, don't take my kindness for weakness. You're listening to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm Tom Ryan, doing this with my wife Heidi every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. If you
tell them where they can find it.
Yeah, well, right here if you want to listen live. But if you want to check out our shows and basically say you're into the Stack series, if you like what you're hearing, because we're going deeper. You're not hearing just the obvious hits. We're trying to find the best material released by the label at this time, whether it was a hit or not. I'm not playing everything they released, of course. We did that for Motown.
But we can't do that now. I mean, we could. It would take us a lot longer to get through it.
This would be a three-year job. But even as it is, like I said, this is show number 22 that we're doing now.
What a job it would be.
I'm loving every bit of it. I'm loving all these shows.
Me too.
But if you're into Stacks, we do have 21 other shows. You can hear them whenever you want to. Go to our website. Just search for American Hit Radio on any search engine. Or just go to the URL is AmericanHitNetwork.com. It's that simple. And our Wednesday show and our Friday show are on the homepage.
We can help you while away a weekend.
Exactly. You could hear the entire Stack series if you wanted to dig in there and hear quite a ton of fabulous music in chronological order. Get a sense of the history of the label right up to this point. 22 hours of Stack's history right there for you without commercial interruption, I might add. And if you're into the Stack series, while you're there, you might look around. You might see some of the other crazy things that we've done as well. I mean, shows, entire series dedicated to James Brown, dedicated to Marvin Gaye, the Beach Boys, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, series based upon very early topics like Jimmy Rogers and the Carter family, the birth of the blues, goes on and on and on. There's an awful lot of stuff there. New Orleans jazz shows, Bessie Smith. So there's a lot there for you to wade through that you might find interesting. So just check out our website. I think you'll enjoy it. If you have a hard time tuning in and hearing us live, it's just sitting there waiting for you to basically just click on it whenever you want to hear it. AmericanHitNetwork.com. All right, then, back. Where are we? We're back in the summer of 1972, covering Stax Records. And the next artist I want to talk about a little bit is Albert King.
Oh, Another great one.
Just mentioned him a little bit earlier, didn't we? We were talking about one of his songs. I know William Bell was writing some of his biggest hits for him. Well, in this instance, this is a rather interesting story. This song that we're going to play was written by I don't think anybody would really know the name, Jerry Beach. He's the songwriter. And he, you know, being unknown, he had basically given this to an also relatively unknown singer named Geeter Davis. And Davis had recorded a demo of the song.
That sounds like a Southern name.
Geeter, yeah. Spelt like Greater, but without the R. So anyway, you know, it was a demo, and nobody really knows exactly what happened at this point, except somehow the demo ended up at Stax Records. And at that point in time, the songwriter, Jerry Beach, was in California playing with a band that was called South. Just doing gigs, trying to, you know, make a couple bucks on the weekend, when he finds out that he has a chart hit, and it's recorded by Albert King.
That's crazy.
He had no idea how this, nobody really knows how the basically went from Geeter Davis's demo, but somehow that demo ended up at Stax, and they decided to cut it with Albert, and once it was on the chart, that was that. Here's that song, recorded by Albert King. It's called I'll Play the Blues for You.
Down and out, and you feel real hurt. Come on over to the place where I was, and all your loneliness I'll try to soothe. Come on in. You might run across, yeah, some of your old friends.
I'll play the blues for you. Come on in. Sit right here. Let's rap a while. You see, I'm kind of lonely too. And loneliness is a very bad thing if you let it get the best of you. That loneliness can get you down, you know. Yeah, yeah. Are you comfortable now? Yeah. That's what I was saying. Yeah, as I was saying before, loneliness can get you down. And I have heard of loneliness blowing some good people's mind, you know. But you can't do that. This is a big world. This is a big world. There's too many nice things happening in this world. You're a very pretty girl. Where you live? No, no, no. Disregard that. That's okay. That's the most important thing. I want to know you. I say, I want to know you. Uh-huh. Ooh-wee, that's groovy, ain't it? I'll play the blues for you. I ain't got no big name. Oh, Lord, and I ain't no big star. I'll play the blues for you on my guitar. Oh, your loneliness I'll try to soothe. I'll play the blues. Excuse me.
Albert King there, proving why we just dedicated one of our How Music Changed series shows to a series of shows which we called We Three Kings.
Albert now, King did he, yeah, them. Right, B.B. King being another one. And
actually,
being...
and that, we kept B.B. King out of the We Three Kings series because he's going to get his own run. We'll definitely...
That was a very B.B. King sounding blues.
Definitely,
there.
Absolutely, with the production and everything. I couldn't agree more. All right, then. Albert King with I'll Play the Blues for You. This next track is by an unknown singer named Roger Hatcher. I presume he's unknown. I mean, really nothing happened with this record when it was released. This is one of those contract records, something that the label ended up getting through its association with different producers and stuff who would basically find material and just bring it in under contract,
okay.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
This basically came through Don Davis up in Detroit, and he had this operation called Groovesville. And this guy, Roger Hatcher, was one of the soul singers that had worked on that. Never really had much success, but I really dug this song. So I think I may as well play it, because just because it wasn't a hit doesn't mean it ain't good. It's called I Dedicate My Life to You.
I dedicate my life to you, baby. I dedicate my life to you. You're all I ever wanted in this world. I'm so glad you're my girl. You can have my heart, you can have my soul, my whole body. You can take control. I dedicate my life to you.
Short but sweet.
It reminded me a little bit of something. Maybe Tower Power must have been listening to stuff like this.
Ah, right around this time when they began to break out as well. I think the Tower Power debut album came out around 1972, maybe 73. So I'm sure you're right.
How about that?
Yeah. Time-wise, you're exactly right as far as, you know, in the flow of time, how things basically go. And if this whole basically what we're always talking about is how things influence subsequent music. And it's what pretty much the whole point of how music changed the whole series. So I'm sure you're right. It's a good point. Really good point. Carla Thomas, poor Carla, man. This is like pretty much the end of the line. I thought that we were going to be done playing with her for good last week, but she kept releasing stuff without any chart action at all. It's so sad. I mean, the label didn't know what to do with her after all. She had all those hits, and then they began to vanish. So what they kept doing was they kept trying different producers on her. Say, okay, somebody's going to bring her back and have a hit. You know, Donny Hathaway produced her without luck. Don Davis, Al Bell, even Chips Moman, and then, you know, Johnny Baylor, the hitman, essentially, who was working for Isaac Hayes, all trying to basically do something to bring her back. And it just wasn't happening. It's like, you know, it was the tide had turned, and it was going out for Carla, and that was it. But I dug this song, so we'll play this one now from Carla Thomas. It's called Sugar.
You mean to me.
poor Carla Thomas. Good song there, though, called Sugar. We only got time for one more here, but it's telling at this point. If you look over the charts, I mean, Stax, we started this series because there was something known as the Stax sound, what Stax hits sounded like.
That's, right.
Was the whole point of us doing
this.
In
the inception.
At this point in time, though, we played 10 songs on this show. The majority of them were not recorded in Memphis.
Right.
The majority of these songs that we played for this show. More songs on this show were recorded in Muscle Shoals than were recorded in Memphis. That's saying something. So that's how much the Stax sound had shifted, including this track by the Staple Singers, who were doing all their recordings at Muscle Shoals at this point in time. We'll end you with this track by the Staples. It's called This World. Take care, everybody. See you next week.